treatment of bradblog.com. In for Mike Malloy all week. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas at AM 1360 Rational Radio, celebrating their final week on terrestrial radio. They'll continue on the internet. They may even continue on television. And if the radio gods are with us, well, the hell with the radio gods. What we need is an angel to put them back on the air down here in Dallas to keep progressive radio on the air in a town that needs it more than just about anyone in the whole damn nation. Please, someone help us out. We are celebrating their last week on terrestrial radio. I will be here all week in Dallas for Malloy, and I'm glad you can join us. You can also join us by telephone if you wish, 800-277-1637, extension 703. That's a lot of numbers. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. Got it? All right. Never enough time for anything. I'm gonna try. Every time I do Mike's show, I want to bring on so many guests. There's so many people that I want to talk to that I never have enough time to talk to you, the callers. So I'm gonna try desperately this week, if I can, to keep the third hour open for all calls. Nothing but you. But you can also try to get in this hour, and you may want to speak to my next guest, Frank Schaefer, who's a controversial fellow himself. You'll find out about that in a minute. You can log on to bradblog.com, join the chat room over there. It's hopping. I'm trying to keep my eyes on it. Also follow us on Twitter. I always forget to mention that. We are the Bradblog at Twitter. Please follow us. We'll send you funny things about explosive diarrhea and stuff. But that's our next hour. Right now, we're going to speak with Frank Schaefer. He's the former right-wing fundamentalist leader. He's also a regular Brad Blog guest contributor. He's the author of Crazy for God, How I Grew Up as One of the Elect, Helped Found the Religious Right, and Lived to Take All or Almost All of It Back. And his newest book is Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. I promised Frank I was going to speak about that one this time around with him. Now that we got a bit more time, I'm going to try to get to that new book. But he's been stirring up all kinds of stuff over at Brad Blog, and I'm delighted he has. He calls him as he sees him. And as I mentioned in the first hour, he wrote what is perhaps one of the most controversial articles at Brad Blog ever. Little did I suspect it would be quite as controversial as it was. We're not going to hit that one immediately. We're going to tease it a little bit. First, I want to get to, let me welcome Frank to the show. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Frank.
Hey, Brad. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, and a Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
Hey, same to you.
You've been stirring up trouble at Brad Blog, and God love you for it. Let me hit a couple of your recent pieces very quickly before we get to this one that was apparently, shockingly, so controversial, Frank. Who knew? But let's talk first about the America-hating Republicans. You said basically that Republicans and these teabaggers, they're anti-American. You've made the case for it. This is not, or maybe this is. Is this the Republican Party, the Republican right, the religious right that you grew up with, you and your father, when you were leaders of the religious right movement, or has it changed? In other words, have they changed, or have you changed, Frank?
Well, I certainly have changed, but it's the religious right has changed too. You know, thumbnail sketch here, which I cover, you know, in depth in my memoir, Crazy for God, but briefly. I was born in Switzerland to Francis Schaefer, who became an evangelical leader. He was an American missionary who had gone over to Europe just after the Second World War. And that's where I grew up, in a little fundamentalist commune called Le Brie Fellowship. And back in those days, it was just all about saving people for Jesus and preaching the gospel. And my parents had a community wherein they had their home open to whoever came through. People could stay. And whether you agreed with the theology or not, the purpose was clearly evangelistic and religious. And then, of course, in the 1970s, Dad and I, by that time I was a young man in my early 20s, and was his sidekick in that kind of nepotistic evangelical style, both became leaders in the religious right. He being credited as one of the fathers of the religious right, me as his young fiery son who was out there with him talking to everybody from Ronald Reagan and the Bush family, and Gerald Ford, to large audiences in places like Dallas and Atlanta and Nashville, all over the country. On the beginning of the religious right movement, which really centered around the anti-abortion movement. Mm-hmm. And in those days, it was a combination of religious fervor plus the anti-abortion cause. And then, of course, that morphed, and it morphed into two things. First of all, it morphed into the Republican Party, took over the Republican Party, became the Republican Party, subsumed the Republican Party, to the point where you had a traditional Republican like John McCain, who in 2000 called the religious right agents of intolerance, and by the time the last election came along, he had to nominate somebody, being Sarah Palin, for his vice presidential candidate in order to throw the religious right a sop and stay in good with them. And so it did change. It went from being a religious right to being a political far right using religious terminology to keep the foot soldiers on board, but led by people like Dick Armey, who's really just a shill for corporate America on one hand, or people like Sarah Palin on the other, who were translating her religious ambition to lead sort of a weird idea about her being some sort of a prophetess who was going to help the Christian community into a political career. And so it was itself radicalized from even where we started things in the early 70s.
And when you were starting things and you were working with Jerry Falwell and the Billy Grahams and those guys, you were really on the outside of the party. Am I correct here, for folks who don't know the history here, that the religious right was not always a part of the Republican Party? You guys had to, at that time, really bang down the doors to get in. They thought you all were kooks, too. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. If you roll the clock back a little bit to that period of time, you had people like William F. Buckley, who was a perfectly sane human being and himself practicing Roman Catholic, but certainly never to be confused with the religious right. People like Barry Goldwater and others, and their shtick was anti-communism, pro-capitalism. Then their fringe were people like the John Birch Society, but they were all about anti-communism and conspiracy theories. None of it was about a mixture of church and state. In fact, Barry Goldwater himself, for instance, was pro-choice because he didn't believe in the mixture of church and state. Ronald Reagan, as governor of California, had legalized abortion. Only later, after Roe v. Wade and after people like my dad, Dr. Sierra Koop, who became Surgeon General, that I made a film series with called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, that really founded the religious rights involvement in the anti-abortion movement. Only after that period of time, when we, as you say, banged the doors down, challenged people, went and talked with folks like Jerry Falwell, said they needed to get into politics and not just simply, you know, talk about the gospel, et cetera, et cetera. Then the religious right became something political on one hand, and the Republican Party, looking for a bigger base, for instance, blue-collar Democrats who would have voted Republican because of the abortion issue, Reagan Democrats, other people identified as former Democrats or libertarians or whatever who were swept into the movement, you know, the issues we put forward, anti-abortion and so forth, were simply used to make the tent bigger. And then were parlayed into about a 40-year period, 35-year period of Republican dominance in American politics built on these social issues that became known as the culture war. And so both in Crazy for God and in my new book, Patience with God, I talk about the movement, about how it came about, and then analyze the reaction to it, which has become itself very radicalized. And you know, you see people like Christopher Hitchens and others writing against religion per se based on the fact that they hated the way it was politicized. And now, of course, the whole thing has become, you know, very, very polarized, and that's where we are today.
You took them to task in Dear Republicans, Why Do You Hate America?, which you can read at bradblog.com. You said, you are doing, in this letter to Republicans, you wrote, you are doing to our whole country, and I should say this is in regard to blocking health care, blocking same-sex marriage, using it as a political wedge. You said, you are doing to our whole country what Bush did to New Orleans after Katrina, looking the other way and playing politics while the rest of us go down. You Republicans are the ones who, to use your very own Sarah Palin's word, are not the, quote, real Americans. You are members of a lie-based evangelical paranoid cult. Enough. If prayer is what you call for now, here's my prayer. May the Republican Party, with all its lies, hate, stagnation, and obstructionism, be swept away by our first black president's success against all odds. Frank Schaefer, we're going to talk about that success, if it comes, if it happens, and your opinions on it, which caused quite a stir, I should add. Also about your comparison, comparing the evangelical right in America here with the Taliban, which I think you're right on the money about. We're speaking with Frank Schaefer. We're going to talk with him. Take your calls at 877-277-1637, extension 703. I'm Brad Friedman, in for Mike Malloy. Going to take a quick break and come back with much more of Frank Schaefer for this, the entirety of this hour. So we hope you'll join us. Stay tuned.
He will bring you down. He will get you high. Something keeps him going miles and miles away to find another place to play. And night after night, who treats you right, baby, is the guitar man.
Oh, the yellow rose of Texas is the only gal I love. Her eyes are even bluer than Texas skies above. Her heart's as big as Texas, and wherever I may go, I'll remember her forever because I love her so. There are so many roses that bloom along the way.
What am I doing? My Malloy program, yeah. And that's Yellow Rose, Texas, because we are live in Dallas tonight. Sitting in for Mike Malloy, Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com, speaking with Frank Schaefer, author of Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. And I promise, Frank, that I will talk to you about that in a moment. And now, well, let's get to it. Let's get to it in this way. And then after the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk about the most controversial column ever at BradBlog, where Frank is now a regular contributor. But we want to establish his bona fides here in this area. Here's an open letter, a quick piece from an open letter from Jesus to Christian America. Christian is in quotes as Frank wrote this. He completes this letter from Jesus to Christian America, saying, "If I walked here on earth again with you, you'd kill me again. Just as you are going to kill all that is good in my name, just as some of you are praying for the death of your president, who you even call Antichrist. Let me tell you who is Antichrist. Christian saved America. Depart from me. Please come up with a new name for whatever you are. Drop the word Christ out of your name. You've destroyed my reputation." We love that. We love that, Frank. And Sean is giving me a thumbs up from the booth here. You've compared the religious right in America. You know them well. You've left them. You've compared them to the Taliban. Are they really that different, Frank, than the Taliban?
Yeah, you know, I wish that was just hyperbole, but of course it's a matter of degree. But no, they're not, because once you have a group of people who have decided that they're getting direct messages from God through either prophecy or their scriptures or the Quran or whatever, and that they don't have to win their points on the basis of either reason or public support, then you have the basis of a theocracy. So if you look at what folks like James Dobson have done, in the way he has wound the base of the Republican Party around mm-hmm. his finger, told them how to vote. If you look at the way the evangelical community has remained silent, that's the quote-unquote respectable leaders, over things such as the bumper sticker calling for president's death based on a psalm where the prayer is an imprecatory prayer for the death or removal of someone. You know, if you look at folks showing up at town hall meetings with loaded assault weapons, wearing T-shirts or carrying signs talking about the Tree of Liberty being watered with the blood of tyrants, which is a repeat of what Timothy McVeigh had on his T-shirt the day he did the Oklahoma bombing,
yeah.
Then it's just a matter of degree and it's a matter of time. And one of the things I've written about on your blog site and also in my books, Like Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism, as I argue that this movement is driven by a kind of a paranoid fear of the other. And, of course, what's so ironic in America is that while they fear the other, while they act as if they're a persecuted minority, the evangelicals have actually been in command of the country in the sense that this minority has been the voter base that kept George Bush in office for 8 years, the Republicans dominant in Congress for over 30 years, basically trashed the presidency of the Clinton years in terms of the way they took him down and hounded him virtually out of office. When you add it all up, you know, this is not a persecuted minority. This is a theocracy waiting in the wings that has a theology called Reconstructionism at its heart, where they want to take America back for Jesus, quote-unquote, which is an odd sentence since it never belonged to Jesus in the beginning with a country.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, there's no taking it back. I mean, this was a country that, you know, was founded by everybody from Virginia colonists who came over to make a buck, to Puritans in the Bay State, to Jews and Dutchmen and all the rest of it down in New York and on all over the map. And so, you know, really, it isn't different from the Taliban. And one of the things I've argued in my books and also in my columns that I've written for you and for other people is that if these folks were living in the best of all possible worlds, as far as they're concerned, they would be doing things such as they were doing, you know, back in the day when witches were being hung and burnt and where you had death penalties against gay people, mm-hmm. homosexuals, and so forth. It's not far-fetched. And there's a whole wing of the Reconstructionist movement that I write about in Patience with God that has gone out of its way to say that they think that the law of the United States ought to be changed to match Old Testament biblical law that really would have people out there incurring death penalty for homosexual behavior, whatever it is. And so, yeah, I'm sorry to say that we really do have our own version of the Taliban.
Hold the thought. Frank Schaefer and the most controversial column ever at Brad Blog right after this. Brad in for Malloy. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike all week long, live from the Big D. That's right, Dallas, Texas, at AM 1360, Rational Radio, the final days of Rational Radio. How rational radio will be after they're gone, I can only guess. Because it ain't all that rational now. We're speaking with Frank Schaefer, the former right-wing fundamentalist leader, very former at this point, author of Crazy for God and Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. He's also a Brad Blog guest contributor. He regularly writes over there now, stirred up a lot of trouble over the past week or so, and we're going to hit that in a moment, but I want to respond, Frank, to a couple of the points you made as you were comparing America's religious right with the Taliban and how this became a political movement. You know, I don't think that George W. Bush, as long as I'm here in Texas, I don't think these guys, in truth, give a damn about Christianity. I don't believe they give a damn about Jesus, frankly, any more than it gets them votes. Period. Because if they did, I can't imagine anyone who actually follows Christ's teachings could run a presidency the way George W. Bush did. Am I out of line to make that accusation, Frank?
Well, I think if you wind up at a place in history where you live in a country where in one of the major political parties claiming to be the party where evangelicals find a home believes in legal torture but not in universal health care, that kind of sums up where it's gone in view of what I think anyone who read the New Testament would come away believing in terms of where Christ would be if given a vote on any of these questions. And so whether you believe in Jesus, whether you believe in the Bible, whether you are a Christian or an atheist or agnostic, I don't think an objective reading of the New Testament leaves you in a place thinking that whatever led this movement would be for torture and against health care. So the Republican Party is in a weird position because its base of operation is in a religious movement, and that religious movement has so denied its own roots that it itself is no longer religious in the sense that it's commonly understood. It's just a very tough-minded, selfish, pro-business group of people who, I'm afraid, also get straight to the lunatic, paranoid fringe and include so many people now who are on that fringe that, you know, when you hear about three policemen gunned down in Pittsburgh by someone who thinks that Obama's going to take away his weapons, or somebody strolls into the Holocaust Museum in Washington and shoots down an African-American security guard.
Yeah.
Obviously, these things aren't a conspiracy, but violence and extreme action is really in the air. You know, you only got to listen to 10 minutes of Glenn Beck on any day, or what spews out of Fox News, or realize that George Bush essentially used his security apparatus of the United States to keep people on edge so that he would not be questioned. And you understand that, you know, this has nothing to do with religion as it's normally understood. Religion is being used to push forward something very, very different.
Yes, I think Jesus may have frowned upon walking into a church and shooting a doctor in the head, as was the case with Dr. George Tiller down in Kansas. I wrote again about a Nazi Republican out here in Houston who actually shot someone in cold blood over the last day or so. Happily, he was apprehended. But he has a Nazi SS tattoo on his neck and a Republican sticker on the Republican Party bumper sticker on the back of his pickup truck. That's, I'm afraid to say, what's become of the Republican Party. And you have been top-notch as far as calling them out on that, Frank Schaefer. But what seems to have caught the ire of a lot of folks at the Brad Blog was your column from last week. Let me see. It's entitled, Obama Will Win, Why and How His Critics from the Left and Right Will Be Proven Wrong. And, well, you've gone after the right in article after article at Brad Blog. And now you went after the left as well. And I guess it got the dander up of some of our folks, and they might want to talk to you at 800-277-1637. That's 800-277-1637, extension 703. Essentially, Frank Schaefer, you made the case for Barack Obama, and it ticked a lot of people off. Give us what is the case at this point for Barack Obama, and let's see if we can tick off everybody else.
Well, the case for Barack Obama, first of all, is who he's not. He's not John McCain and Sarah Palin. So my message to folks is just get a grip, because we live in a real world, and in that real world, there's always an alternative to where you are.
Yeah.
So, you know, for folks, for instance, who listen to his pro-gay, pro-gay rights speech and say, okay, speech isn't fast enough, you know, why don't we have gay marriage in all 50 states yet, and why don't we have gays serving openly in the military, I say amen, yes. You know, it's a civil rights issue, but when it comes to Barack Obama, don't lay everything at his door just because in 1 year in office he hasn't managed to achieve everything you hope for. If it comes for getting out of Afghanistan and getting out of Iraq, you know, let's remember, he didn't take us to war in those countries. And so I think a lot of my problem with the critique of Barack Obama from the right, of course, is that, as I talk about impatience with God, the right is literally unhinged. When it comes to the left, my critique is that the left is too impatient, and I don't think really understands what the alternative would be, perhaps as well as someone such as myself, who comes hot out of that alternative,
mm-hmm.
and who understands where it would take us, maybe to a degree some people don't. You know, where I'm coming from is I get up every day just happy that we don't have a Sarah Palin and John McCain in office. I also get up every day realizing that, for instance, on something like health care reform, that if we get anything out of a Congress that is stymied by the obstructionist Republicans who would use the filibuster to try to destroy any chance of doing anything that would change the status quo on any level when it comes to business, health care, war issues, or anything, that, you know, there's folks out there that say half a loaf is better than no loaf. You know, I'm at a point after looking at the last 30 years of American history where I'm very grateful just for one slice off the loaf. And I think, I guess, buy into the idea of incremental change. And I think given an eight-year, two-term presidency, Barack Obama will be able to achieve the things that I believe he sincerely has set out to do. I just think people have been in too much of a hurry. So I don't think the disagreement so much is over where folks would like to see this go. I think I would be in line with most progressives on that. I think where I step out of that line is in the kind of hurry-up-already mode that is ready to give up after barely 12 months. I just don't think that shows a very good grip of how history works, let alone politics.
Well, I concur with you on that point, but let me make a couple in response. A, did he really need to send 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan?
I have no idea. I'm not a military strategist, and I wouldn't know, but I would like to ask what, you know, out of all the various terrible alternatives that have been put on his plate by George W. Bush,
right,
who took us into Iraq instead of doing exactly what his military leaders were saying when it came to surrounding Tora Bora, using the full force if we were going to be there to catch bin Laden, you know, we have been put in a no-win situation, and so any alternative there is horrible. And anybody who's reading about the situation, anybody who's keeping track of it knows that, you know, as everyone says, the real fight is in Pakistan. The real fight is elsewhere. There are no simple solutions here. I have no idea, but I do know this, and that is whatever he's doing there, you can just trumpet and triple it and quadruple it if John McCain had been there. And the reality is that we have a country that has been taken to war by George W. Bush in one completely unnecessary war, one bungled war. And other than people who are philosophically or religiously pacifist, which I think is a perfectly legitimate position that I don't happen to share, but nevertheless,
yeah.
But other than those folks, and they have a good argument against all war and all armed conflict, which is fine, but unless you're one of those people, I'd like to hear the great idea on Afghanistan. And I think he's been presented with a series of very, very bad alternatives. And it's one thing to sit down and write about it. It's another thing to wake up one morning as commander-in-chief of this mess.
Okay. But now, and you make all good points, but did Barack Obama not say that we needed to make him do these things? We needed to make him do these things that need to be done. In other words, the left is not like the right. The right tends to get into, you know, to lockstep behind their leader, and they say, oh, well, they're not perfect, but we support them. We're with them all the way, wherever we can. Isn't it our job? Isn't it our job not only as progressives, folks on the left, Democrats, but as Americans?
Sure.
Isn't it our job to call on the president to do better? We, you know, I mean, we can say, hey, way to go, Obama, you're
sure,
not
sure.
Sarah Palin, you're not John McCain, but shouldn't we be holding his feet to the fire? And when you then hold the feet to the fire of those critics for doing exactly that, it's our job, Frank.
I agree, and I think in a democracy it's our job to voice opinions, but of course another opinion is to say once in a while, hey, listen, when you have a president who, if his presidency fails, not only does this country fail, but the progressive movement for the foreseeable future is done. This was your shot. You better play your cards carefully. And I'll give you an example. You know, you have somebody like Paul Krugman, who for months has been writing warning things about President Obama, criticizing him on economic policy, on health care. Yeah, but when push came to shove, he said, yes, but this health care bill is a good one in terms of the contrast of what would happen if nothing was done. We've got to get behind it. So, yeah, you have a Paul Krugman who's a critic, who's holding his feet to the fire, but at the critical moment also weighs in with some support. And I think that shows some balance. I'm not saying that I think it's perfect or that everybody's got to be a Paul Krugman. But on the other hand, I think there's another aspect of the critique of President Obama that's simply being sort of a left-wing version of hoping he'll fail so we can be proved right.
Yeah.
And I really think there is a kind of a death wish in part of, not the general progressive movement, but part of the progressive movement that I think is so used to a kind of a psychologically embattled position, almost that they've been taken hostage, and they just can't get used to the idea that once in a while you can actually win. You don't always have to be standing on the fringe making comment. You know, sometimes you're in a winnable situation. And I think To me, the tragedy of a critique that goes too far is that it saps the kind of public support and will, say, with young voters who waded in for the first time on this election and so forth, that actually hands victories that are unnecessary to the Republicans. I mean, you know, I'll give you an example. I don't think any progressive could have been sitting there rejoicing to watch John McCain on the Senate floor gleefully saying that he was all for the progressives now who wanted to stop the health care bill. And, of course, he was being facetious. But nevertheless, you know, at a certain point, you just have to say, hey, part of this is right and wrong and principle. But it's not all principle. It's tactics, too. And that's where I think some of the progressive movement goes off the rails.
Yeah.
They forget that it's not just all a matter of principle and huffing and puffing.
Yeah.
It's tactics.
Yeah, and I think on that end, some of them aren't smart. When we turn this thing into a personal thing, when we turn this thing into Barack Obama is just the same as George W. Bush. I think that's naive. I think that's short-sighted. Yes, the effect of both of their policies may end up similar in many ways, but I think you're right. I think you're undercutting your best hope, and there's
right.
a smarter way to do it, to be both critical without undercutting him. Let's get to your calls after this break, 800-277-1637. Our final break, we'll be back with Frank Schaefer. Much more, Brad in for Malloy, right after this. To the Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Speaking with Frank Schaefer, our last few minutes here. I did promise that I was going to allow Frank this time to get in at least a few words about his newest book, Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. But let me get to a quick call. And if I, by the way, if I don't get to you this hour, the whole next hour, all calls, all you at 800-277-1637. Extension 703. Let me get to, where are we here? Line two, I'm learning how these work. Tom in Dallas, welcome to the Malloy Show. Question for Frank Schaefer.
Yeah, hi, Brad. Hi, Frank. Hey, the religious right operative, Justice Scalia, engineered the coup that put George Bush in office in 2000 by stopping the recount in Florida. And I know that Brad is aware that there have been other operatives on the religious right who've had an effect on elections. I'm thinking of Mike Connell
yeah.
in 2004.
Yeah.
And I would like for Brad, you and Frank to maybe talk about people on the religious right who are willing to commit treason in order to push their particular agenda and put people into office that shouldn't be there.
Thanks for your call, Tom. I'm going to let Frank handle that, and then I will pick up my thoughts in the next hour. Frank, you have a thought on
well,
that?
Yeah, and people have written on this, including you, Brad, and, of course, Mark Miller and others who have investigated the whole vote-stealing and vote-rigging thing. And you got to understand, as I was saying before and as I argue in my book Patience with God, you have a right-wing religious group of people who believe God is on their side, just like the Taliban. If you look at the theology of the suicide bombers in the Middle East, who are perfectly willing to kill even other Muslims in view of their cause being so just in their viewpoint, we have an American equivalent here, and that is people who are totally ready to subvert democracy in this country based on the fact that they believe that they are somehow morally superior beings and right in what they are doing. And you see it in the Bush presidency. You see it in the way Karl Rove spread lies about John McCain in 2000, saying he had a black illegitimate child. They knew it was a lie. Everybody knew it was a lie, but it just worked slightly well enough to tip the scales in the primaries. you know, you see a bag of dirty tricks.
Mm-hmm.
All of this stuff is justified on the, on some sort of spurious theological basis that they have God on their side, and that some higher law, quote unquote, than the U.S. Constitution applies. And so we're in a position where people who take a different point of view have to insist that whether it's a military chaplain who's using the army to proselytize young recruits, or whether it's the President of the United States, that their loyalty has to be to the Constitution of the United States, not to the Bible, not to a higher law, quote unquote, but to the job that they're elected to carry out. And the same thing in election and vote stealing. You have to understand that that the rules of democracy don't apply to folks who think that they're following some higher law that supersedes all other laws. And if they can be doing that sincerely and or just using it so that they get foot soldiers, as I argue them with patients with God, it comes out exactly the same way.
The end justifies the means.
Yeah, absolutely. And religious conviction is extraordinarily dangerous as a motivator for anti-democratic behavior. You see it in the Middle East. You see it right here in this country.
I wanted to ask you about your book, and I feel it's terribly unfair because we're up against the back of the hour. Because I wanted to, here was the question that I have for you, and I don't know if
sure.
you can answer this in 30 seconds or not. But
sure.
the book is Patience with God, Faith for People Who Don't Like Religion or Atheism. I don't care for religion myself, Frank.
Right.
I think it's caused a hell of a lot of trouble in this world that we're in right now.
Right.
And I'd want to know why I should have patience for anybody who feels otherwise. That said, I'm coming up at the back of the hour. I don't know if you can hang on for 6 or 7 minutes at the top of the hour to give you at least a fair
sure,
chance.
Sure, I'd love to. I'll be right there.
All right. Hang in there with me, Frank. Appreciate it. And hang in, those of you who are on the lines at 800-277-1637, extension 703. We will get to all of your calls in the next hour, I promise. So call in now. Get in line now. Chat over at bradblog.com, where things are getting heated, and I can't even keep up with them. But we're going to finish up with just a few minutes with Frank after the top of the hour, and then get to all of these calls. Brad, in for Malloy, live from Dallas. Stay with us.